This show is brought to you by the JBL Risk Manager. Money, risk and trade management kept simple. Hello and welcome to Talking Trading. I'm Caroline Steve and it's great to have your company. Want to know the stuff financial leaders are made from? Tax accountant and TV star Jason Cunningham shares with us today the characteristics of financial leaders and the power of not being afraid to make a mistake. Louise Bedford tells us to climb out of hell in mind power. And we hear how one mentoree, Mag Smith, is doing what all traders desire. But first up, here's the news with Chris Tate for the week ending 10th of October. Chris Tate, hello and welcome.
Hello, Caroline.
So how did the US market close last week?
I think the appropriate expression for the US market is kamikaze, in that it simply poleaxed itself into the ground. But that's it's a universal theme for last week. Every world market, bar the Hang Seng, which had a little bit of a bounce, and the Shanghai Composite, took a hell of a beating. What the Dow was down about 2.5%, NASDAQ down over 4%, DAX down over 4%. We were down around 2.5%. So for those people who are in the sort of majority who are convinced that markets never go down because the law of gravity has never been repealed, they got a very nasty shock last week because markets do go down. But the issue with the Dow, and this is something people forget, or with the US market in general, is post the GFC, it's had a spectacular rise for 5 years. It's gone up, what, about 160%, depending on which index you look at. And it's been some 2 years or so since it's had a pullback of 10% or more. So it's been phenomenally robust. It's been really quite dynamic. So it's quite natural within a natural system to expect that sooner or later this will occur. And you will get a situation where people have been talking about such an event for a very, very long time. All of a sudden, there's a catalyst they think is valid, and you get waves of selling into the market. So you get this self-fulfilling prophecy. And we were not immune. We took the same pounding as well.
So let's talk about the Australian market. Hot and cold sectors last week.
None at all. and that's been quite... I probably should take a step back. One of the things about this sort of market is that it's only a problem for people who don't understand what the movements mean to them. So, for example, if your macro filter is still on, that means you're still investing. So these perturbations don't concern you. If it's off, then you're out of the market, so the perturbations don't concern you. If you don't actually understand what a macro filter is, then you should be very, very frightened. And that's the majority of people. The problem we have with looking at comparative sectors at present is because we're getting such a broad brush smacking, it's really a question of have I fallen off the top of the Eiffel Tower slightly slower than someone else who's fallen off the top of the Eiffel Tower? We're both heading towards the ground. But if we looked at our comparative, let's say relative strength, if I'm falling a little bit slower because I've got more drag, then my relative strength is higher. Therefore, I appear to be positive. The problem is we're both heading towards the ground. And that's why I somewhat flippantly say none. My view of the local market at present is my macro filter is off. Therefore, I'm not buying any equities at all. I have to disclose that I am short our market, the US market, and the European market. Mm-hmm. I'm also short the Aussie dollar because that is where the action is. That's where, from my perspective, one's chance of profitability is enhanced. It's not enhanced by going long at all.
Advice to traders this week?
In terms of the things I'm looking at, when equities markets behave like this, we've been quite fortunate at present in that not only are markets starting to trend, but we've seen an increase in volatility and an increase in trend across a wide range of markets, including currencies, which were moribund for months. So my perspective has shifted from long equities, which has switched off, to, I'm short the Aussie US, short Aussie yen, euro yen, pound yen. I'm looking at particularly some of the precious metals. Gold and silver have been heading down for some time. They've been quite weak. However, gold itself has had a little bit of a bounce from that resistance, and that's an interesting little interplay to look at. I'm currently tagging natural gas, which is bouncing between about 415 and 385 in a wonderful little channel, and I love channels because moving out of the channel tells you something very, very important. And I've started to look again at shorting platinum and palladium. So there are things going on. The interesting thing is they're just not things that most investors who look to go, oh, I'll just buy CBA and put it under the bed, would do. And this brings us back to a discussion we've had before, that diversification is more than buying stocks that have different names. It's actually looking at a global perspective and seeing what's actually happening. So that's what I'm largely looking at doing this week. I'll also add to my shorts whenever I can, and I'll continue doing that until it ends.
Chris Tate, thank you for the market wrap.
Thanks, Caroline.
To become an exceptional trader, you need to know everything about risk management,
position sizing, money management, sector and portfolio risk, trade and portfolio performance, how to keep a trading diary, and where to place your stocks.
Oh, sounds terrifying, doesn't it? What you need is the JBL Risk Manager. It shortcuts all of that for you so you can revel in stress-free trading. Click on the JBL Risk Manager advertisement at talkingtrading.com.au and enjoy your free 14-day fully functional trial. And now Mind Power with Louise Bedford.
We as a society have had our wings clipped. We've become reliant instead of headstrong, opinionated and free. We've become dependent on handouts instead of hand-ups. We are not legitimately helpful enough to those who need a leg up, but we're way too accepting of those who stay in need. In our society, we have the comfort of knowing that if we fail, the government will step in and we will not starve. However, the effect of this support is insidious in nature. We are offered the eroding facade of cradle-to-grave support, regardless of how able-bodied we are or how intellectually gifted we may be. However, the fallout from this societal shift has been obscured. We've become reliant. We've become complacent. We sit on a couch instead of struggle, fail, and then succeed. Our senses are numbed because we no longer have to scramble to survive or excel. We accept mediocrity and we do not rally against it. A world in which you have the freedom to fail is also a world that offers you untold riches when success is achieved. This is the world of traders, and I make no apology for it. Spread the word. Self-reliance rather than reliance on flawed government systems is the only way to excel. Do not accept what's going on. In every game, there's going to be a crossroad, and when you get to that crossroad, you can either step up or step down. If you're in a bad personal situation, take heart. You can climb out of hell one inch at a time. Now, I can't do it for you. I'm not saying that you won't have to fight for it, but I'm definitely willing to give you the ammunition. Pursue your trading education with focus, because trading is your solution.
What traits do leaders and financially successful people have in common? Tax accountant and TV star Jason Cunningham gives us his financial perspective of those in charge. With all his exuberance and energy, we welcome Jason to the show today. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Caroline, how are you?
Tell us about this article you have come across.
Quite an interesting article. There's a gentleman out of Sydney who believes, or who's been fighting the tax office for quite some time. What happened was he incorrectly served a tax office bill of a little bit over $200,000, and he fought it and fought it and fought it, and later it was corrected down to $8,000. And now he's going to have a crack and taking the tax office to the administrative Appeals Tribunal, and is suing them for a lazy $5.8 million for ruining his life. So, yeah, so the story goes that this guy, he didn't lodge his tax returns for a number of years, and the tax office hit him with an asset betterment test and said, look, we believe with the assets that you've got that you should have earned in the vicinity of this much income, and therefore you're subject to this much tax. Now, this guy's lost his marriage, his business, his properties, fighting this battle, and now he's suing them for $5.8 million. I don't know how much money you need to replace a wife, but he's putting it up there at $5.8 million, this bloke. So where's the lesson in that, Carolyn? I guess for mine, the first thing I'd be doing, and I know I'm an accountant, but the first thing I'd be doing is lodging my tax returns on time. I think that's the first point, because as you and I both know, the biggest revenue arm of the Australian government is the Australian Tax Office. They get a bit of a war chest, and quite interestingly,
established in World War One.
Oh, there you go. Well, we have some relationships with some insolvency firms, and every day I get a note from one of our insolvency practitioner partners, and he sent me a note. And today, the tax office has issued, just today, 19 wind-up notices on 19 different companies. Now, that's interesting because they are in a money-chasing environment, the tax office. Mm. Quite interestingly, we noticed that from the period of March through to June, we could do a lot of deals. We could do a lot of payment plans with the tax office. And the reason for that is that they ran out of money. And once the 1st of July ticked over, they got their allocated another budget, and they're out there and they're chasing taxpayers. So I guess if I was a taxpayer, which I am, I'd make sure that I'd be right up to date with my taxes, particularly my quarterly installments, because the government is chasing money and chasing money big time.
So with your high-level clientele that you service, if you had to divide people up into those who were wealthy and those who hadn't accumulated wealth, what would be the fundamental differences in the type of people?
Well, from an accounting and tax perspective, I guess those that are on the scale of wealthy, Caroline, they do a couple of things. Number one, we talk a bit more about on the front foot, they're proactive with their finances. So, I meet people, and some people I meet, I say, oh, how much money did you make last year? And they say, I don't know. I've got to ask my accountant. Those people aren't the wealthy ones. Now, the wealthy ones are those that have the ability to add up or take control. I think most of us are in a school where we have the ability to add up. But some people want to push the blame onto someone else, or I'm not sure, I need to speak to my accountant. You need to be in control of your own destiny. So those people are using record-keeping techniques that work for them that are live and up-to-date. And, cloud-based computing, I think, is a big revolutionary change in our industry. And so people are right on it, knowing what their numbers are, live data every day rather than waiting for their accountant. I think that's one thing. The second is that they're not behind in their taxes. If anything, they're actually ahead. So they're paying quarterly installments, and potentially they're paying a little bit more than they should, because it's a good way of having forced savings. You take your money off yourself, you give it to the government, and then at the end of the financial year, when you lodge your return, you're going to get a refund because you've paid too much. Now, that may not be prudent for everybody. I know some of my clients aren't interested in giving one more cent away than they should, but for those that have a problem with saving money, here's a good way of forced saving, by making sure that we pay our installments quarterly. I think those are the two traits. And also, I guess the third one is they've got a proactive relationship with their advisor and with their accountant.
So how does someone become proactive with their advisor?
One of the things that we do with a lot of our clients is we talk every year about re-engaging for the next 12 months. Now, maybe this guy should have done it with his wife when he lost his bride over the... Maybe he should have re-engaged her. No. But we like to re-engage our clients every 12 months and talk about, hey, how was the last 12 months with us? And what can we improve on? And then what do we need to do differently? Or should we keep it the same? And that way, we're both on the same page, I guess, with the expectations. Now, as you and I both know, Caroline, things change throughout the year. And so if there is a circumstance where something has changed, we change in our relationship,
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important. Proactivity is from both sides. You can't expect your accountant to be ringing you every day and just say, oh, hi, Caroline, Stephen, I just think about you today. I mean, I do think about you a lot, as you're well aware. But I'm not going to ring you every day. But if we have a relationship where we work out our engagement at the start and when I'm going to call you or when you're going to call me, then I think along the journey we can have a bit of fun. I think it's important. I think it's important that you are proactive. And, you know, one of my early business coaches said to me, Jason, is it the dog wagging the tail or is it the tail wagging the dog? And so it's really important to be in control of that and just, you know, make sure I'm doing the wagging, yeah?
How important is accountability?
Good question. See, this is why you get paid the big bucks, because you're all over the big questions, right? I think one of the significant differentiators between leaders and people that aren't leaders is self-imposed accountability. You know, so self-imposed accountability is when you say yourself you're going to do something. You know, it's making money and keeping money. I see a lot of similarity between that and staying in shape or trying to lose weight, you know. So let's say you were a few kilos overweight and you said, look, you know, these two people, person A says, oh, I'm going to lose some weight this year. And person B says, I'm going to lose 8 kilo by the 15th of November when I'm going to run in a half marathon. You know, that person has initiated some self-imposed accountability and put it out there and said, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And I think self-imposed accountability is awesome. And that is what differentiates successful people and leaders from those that aren't. Because leaders and successful people, they aren't afraid to make a mistake. You know, we live in this world where we're told from a little child, don't do that, that's naughty. Oh, that wrong, that's wrong. Who cares? It doesn't matter if you make a mistake. It doesn't matter. You know, I heard an analogy about life, and they compared it with a speedboat. And they're talking about a speedboat, and there was three components. One was the wake, the other was the engine, and the driver, and the other was the engine. And they said, it's like trying to say that the wake is what will drive you and propel you moving forward. When that's garbage, that's what's happened yesterday. You know what I mean? So, you make a mistake. Who gives a cracker? You know? You know, you haven't hurt anybody too badly. You know, as long as you can learn from that mistake and move on, then don't be frightened to say, hey, I'm going to do this by this date, yeah?
Three take-home messages from this interview in three words.
Gee, that's a... Why do you ask?
Accountability. Proactivity.
Imposed accountability. There's three words right there.
Self-imposed accountability.
Jason, we love you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Caroline. I love you back.
Real Estate Talk with Kevin Turner is Australasia's most respected real estate investing program. Tune in for property investment news, tips and strategies. Each week, Kevin and his team take a fresh look at the property market so you get all the facts to help you make the right property decisions. Subscribe free at realestatetalk.com.au.
Meg Smith did the mentor program in 2010, and she shares with Louise Bedford her excellent trading results.
I'm about to interview Meg Smith. Now, Meg, you did the mentor program in about 2010, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right, yes.
Oh, fabulous. Yes. And you had a little bit of a break before you started trading actively, is that correct?
Yes, it was. Well, I actually had a break after I'd done the mentor program because of an illness in our family, and I had to take a very active role in helping out there. So I realised, well, in the mentor program there were times when you shouldn't trade, and I just stopped straight away. I didn't have the right mindset. So
that is so important. I think sometimes life can get in the way, and to recognise that time is very important. Mm. And tell me about your results.
So for the last two financial years, I've beat the index. So I'm really thrilled about that. I mean, my trading has been a journey and I've learnt so much. But I think what I've realised is that I just keep it simple and sticking to my plan. That's the main thing.
Key.
Being consistent, just doing it every week. I have a weekly system and I just follow that system every week. And that's my secret. It's no secret, really.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. And what did you like best about the mentor program?
Chris and yourself, we're just always there. And also from the other mentorees that were in the program and the ideas that they contributed, I think that was really valuable. But even though it's online and I'm in Sydney and you guys are in Melbourne, there was always immediate contact if you needed it, yes.
See, we love our traders. We love supporting you, even not only during the mentor program, but after the mentor program as well, because that's when the rubber meets the road. I'm so happy to hear about your results, that you've been outperforming the All Ords, which is absolutely the goal that every trader should have in Australia. You match yourself to the index of the area, and then you outperform form that index, and that's your benchmark as to whether you're a good trader.
Yeah.
Thanks so much,
Thanks,
Nat.
Thanks, Louise. Thanks very much.
This show was brought to you by the JBL Risk Manager, removing emotion and guesswork from your trading decisions. It's the only portfolio manager that offers you the complete solution for all of your portfolio management needs. And that's all we have for you today. I'd like to thank our contributors, Chris Tate, Jason Cunningham, Louise Bedford and Mag Smith. Stay tuned next week for Rick Klink from Open Markets to hear about the world of online broking and how it affects your trading results. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team here, thanks for your company. We'll see you next time.
Talking Trading is sponsored by tradinggame.com.au and The Mentor Program. The Mentor Program has been running continuously since the year 2000 and is a six-month, repeat-for-free course run by Chris Tate and Louise Bedford. Make sure you're registered on tradinggame.com.au to hear more.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.